Mr. Eagle's real 12. Fighting through the Bocage area of Normandy and down towards what is nowadays called Swiss Normandy, it appears that you basically shelled and mortared most of the way. Is that correct?
Yes, mainly a lot of shells, yes, and as I say, mortars. I think mortars probably more than the other. That's about it, really. Basically, we just kept going up and stopping, going up, stopping, looking through the. I mean, now and again, we used to get pulled out, or, oh, would you check this out? You know, some house or some dwelling of some sort. I can't remember anything in particular, to be fair, on any of them, but I mean, we were pulled out quite a lot, but I mean, they were a little insignificant with nothing really. And again, you just get the odd sniper again, you know, which was, they were always around. And I think that's about it. We just went from field to field and that was it.
Enemy tanks, did you have much to do with them? Did they come in often to get against you?
No, I think after the, it seems as though they cleared. They seem as though they were completely out of our way. I can't say as I remember. I think the last time I saw one was at, I think twice, I'd say, not once, was after the going over the field, you know, where we had the pounding. But after that, I'd say very, very little, really.
Because I was going to ask you, if you dug in at night and you knew tanks were in the area, you would have to do some kind of defensive situation to prevent them getting through to you.
Yeah, well,
actually.
Yeah, well, we didn't do a lot of mining, but we, as I say, we didn't really lay many mines at all. It was mainly we were picking them up more than anything. There was one occasion, now you mentioned that, where they said, yeah, and I remember saying to the officer who was there, I said, well, this is all very well us putting these down, but who's going to pick them up? And he said, oh, just get on with it. Which wasn't very, I didn't think very satisfactory, really.
Did you come across the Hawking's grenade, which seems to have been a temporary defence against tanks? You can just lay them on the ground around your positions. Did you remember anything like that?
No, I can't say as I remember them. Would there be strips or anything? Or
I'm not sure. They are mentioned from time to time as being used against tanks.
I can't say I ever. I can't remember them at all.
Shooting short from your own artillery, did that occur very often?
Yes, artillery, yes. I mean, we used to get quite a lot of that. But mainly I remember the blooming Yanks. They seemed to be the worst from. They used to come down strafing us. And we used to get the creeping barrages. Yeah, they were a bit nasty, they were. But then again, we used to get followed up then by the strafing. From the Americans, I would tell you, call them a few times.
Did you put down some kind of marker?
Yeah, it was a yellow, I think, if I remember rightly. I think it was a very fluorescent yellow, I think, if I remember rightly. Either yellow or orange. No, yellow, I think it was. It was yellow. And I think they decided that was the south side. And we used to duck. We used to get that quite, that was quite often, that was quite. We used to dread them coming over, actually. But that was about it, I think. Nothing. I say mainly, I would say, we just go on, and then a bit of fire would stop, you dropped. Then you'd probably get one or two tanks might have gone through wars, you know, but having said that, I mean, that was it. I mean, and never recall them coming back. It was always going forward, you know. I can't say there's any, in any time I can recall.
It wasn't really tank country, was it?
Well, we didn't see many, as far as I can remember.
Our own tank supporting you, did they come through?
Well, I think occasionally we got the odd one, but I can't recall them. I think there was a bit of a hoo-ha once about a tank coming through, but I can't recall what it was all about. It was something funny about it. I don't know whether. Where they went to one of our carriers, something, I know it was something daft, but I can't recall. I know there's a lot of shouting going on at the time, and that was all. I can't remember what the incident was. No, I can't remember any more of that last, really.
If you bumped stiff opposition, what was the routine? What happened?
Well, normally what we did, we just sort of dropped, and then if we just dropped where we were, and then just start fingering a way through, you know, and then you get probably a sniper would pop up and give you a little bit of another brief, you know, about a few yards, a few hundred yards, you know, and then you'd be down again, you know. It's a bit slow, really, at times. You just think, oh, my God, why can't we go faster, you know? But then again, I mean, I think these pockets used to... I think we used to go around them in lots of cases, and then they just get wiped up by the people following us. But I think we just, as far as we're concerned, we just keep making the probes going ahead. And as I said before, just every now and again, they just drop and say, look, we have reason to believe that... you know, the officer normally come over to check that place out there, you know, and they used to shout any S men here, and, you know, and we wander over and check it out. Well, I can't recall any more booby traps, as far as in the house anyway. But we used to often get called out, mind.
But other than we've mentioned that the artillery was undershooting from time to time, which presumably wasn't too often. Artillery support was very important to you.
Oh, yes. It just simply wiped it out, and that was it. I mean, it was just, that's it, that's that. We say we think it's in that place, and then just wiped it out, and that was it. We just carried on, and that was it.
What was the weather like?
I could be wrong on this, but I think we had some pretty rough weather at one time. Rain, you know. Because I remember, if I remember right, I think I fell asleep and when I woke up, there was I think it was lying in the water. I recall that for some reason. I think, hey, my God, you must be tired when you sleep in that. As I said, the weather. But there must have been a lot of dry weather, because if I remember rightly, I don't know if I mentioned it last time, when I got bit with this nasty horse. And by this time, it had been healed up and gone. I mean, I think I had good healing skin, and that was it. But as I say, I can't recall any real incidents that really mattered, or at least that were jogging my mind anyway.
You would be pulled out to rest occasionally, from time to time.
Do you know, I can't even really remember resting.
I was going to ask whether there was a big rest camp in the Bayeux area, back in Bayeux. You can't recall being sent there.
No, I can't remember at all, really.
No. Desertions amongst the battalion, did you come across that?
No, I can honestly say that. I can't recall one case.
Enemy desertions, people are actually coming walking into your...
we didn't ask any questions that way. I mean, in fact, we couldn't speak to them anyway. We didn't know that much German, you know. Any German, never mind. No, you see the odd one filtering through, or twos or threes, you know. And I don't think anybody took any really notice of them, really, to be honest with you. They just said, you know, from this way, and they just met us. We were going, they were in the opposite direction of what we were going, and no doubt they've been picked up at the other end. I mean, you mentioned it, must have been quite funny actually, because they didn't what they were doing, and we didn't what the hell was happening to them either. We just sent them back.
Evidently, at one point in the Normandy fire battle, the Germans actually dropped some leaflets on you, telling you that all kinds of horrible things were happening back home, and why you support communists and so forth. Did you recall any leaflets?
No, I didn't say any anyway.
Enemy weapons against you in that terrain, what were the most frightening ones? The ones you respected the most? You would be having Nebelwerfers coming in.
Yeah, well, that was the word I couldn't think of. I told them. Some funny name for that, but wasn't meant. They were quite nasty with these scores. As I said, if they dropped on your right, you got your head down. But if they dropped on your left, you had a good laugh. I mean, well, missed you. but that could be quite intense, man. That was quite intense. When they used to get going on that, they really saturated that. And the I'd say that possibly. I think snipers, because I mean snipers, you couldn't. really.
As we've talked about snipers, they seem to be thick on the ground.
Oh, they were thick. They were thick. Thick around. They seemed to be good. And somebody did mention there's quite a few women snipers as well. But as I say, I can't vouch for that. I mean.
Are the German women or French?
That I wouldn't know. I mean, no idea.
What weapons were you carrying at that time? Still the old 303?
303 Enfield, aye.
Tommy guns, and were they?
I think it was one of the Sten guns, but we mainly had, well, the Bren guns and the 303s Enfield. That was the only ones we had, and that was it. I think there's the old Piat, was it? Piat, was it? Piat, I don't remember. Something like that, anyway.
Did you
ever
fire
Piat? Yeah, in Spain. I can't recall ever firing. I can't say. I didn't get that close.
The route that the battalion was taking from Tilly was down the road towards Juvigny and Hotto, Villers-Bocage. Do you remember any of these areas that you went
to? Well, Villers-Bocage, I remember, and also I just remember it's a hot. But then again, I don't speak French or even. But I don't remember your previous one at all.
You can't remember what you were doing in those areas. Well,
mainly the same thing. Just the same thing. We just kept pressing forward and get down, and then a little bit of fire, and it was pretty. Well, you could say it was mundane. That's not the really the thing, but I mean, you're always on edge. I mean, as long as you're going ahead, I mean, you're always there's always something going to happen, wasn't there? Really.
This takes us up to August when you were wounded.
Yeah.
Do you recall that happening?
Yeah. Well. I can't say I recall a lot about it, but I know there'd been, we'd come across a lot of mines, and if I recall, it was fairly early in the morning, actually, and one part of my section went to, I can't remember who now, I mean, because they're all new lads, and I mean, since I knew a lot of them, but I mean, I knew them by name. Forget them now. And I remember one set going up, and then they had a little bit of trouble. And I think they went a couple off, and I think two or three lads got killed. And then I think one of the officers said to me, "Would you go up and have a quick look round?" And which I did. Because we sort of, I was the closest, that was the way it used to work out. And the officer said to me, "Go up there and check. Take a couple of lads up with you." Well, and then this is one of the officers said, "Come on, well, jump on the carrier." And anyway, we went up to this. If I remember right, it was a sort of crossroads. And there's, if I remember rightly, there's two or three trees on the sides. And anyway, we searched the area. We picked one or two up. One or two. I think there probably would be about 20. I think quite a lot, but they're all scattered in Iggledy Piggledy way, you know. And anyway, we clearly said, "Well, look, the best we can do, we can't see any more." I mean, after all, as far as we were concerned, it was in the freeway that we were mainly interested in. I mean, obviously, kind of going over fields. And anyway, I remember the officer saying, "We'll give you a lift back." So I went back with the. Just see some other group that was back there, and I sat on the edge of the carrier, and then as he sort of threw it in reverse, there's four of us in the carrier, and normally I wouldn't have bothered to jump on. I'd have sort of sprinted back with him, because I wasn't very keen on running in the carriers. But anyway, as I did this day, I always remember standing beside the driver. And as he sort of reversed, there was one hell of a bang. And I ended up in, it must have thrown me about 12 feet up the alley. So I ended up in the tree. And, there was a hell of a mess there was. When I dropped down, of course, everybody's in a bit of a panic. But I think I was the only one, and I could be wrong, I think I was the only one who got out of the carrier. At least they all went out, but I mean, I think I was the only one that lived, and I think that was because I was standing up. But it went off underneath the driver. Well, I got a bit of shrapnel through my thumb, but the big thing was my back and my legs and my feet.
And how many wounds were there?
Well, really, as far as blood went, just as I say, all the bits of, I mean, flexible, but nothing. But the one, my hand was the worst, my thumb was the worst. And but the thing is, my back, I didn't feel that, and I didn't feel my feet, but my feet came, sorry, my legs came up like balloons. And.
Was there shrapnel in them?
No, shrapnel at all, no. But I felt like it was like a jack in the box that had just gone up, and so just a big hammer hit underneath. And I always remember looking for the driver, and he was I wouldn't say badly. He didn't look badly, but he not bad to look at, but he was dead. And then I. I think the other lad was a corporal. I can't remember who was though. But anyway, there was four. I was sitting on in the carrier, and the three were, I'm pretty sure, were killed. The driver was definitely dead.
And yourself? What happened?
Well, after that, I thought to hell, and I ran for it down the road. And after that,
so you were mobile.
Yeah. I was mobile, and I crawled over to the walked over to the driver and. The other two lads, and as far as I was concerned, I thought they were all dead actually. But then again, a few more people come round.
And you went back, you say? Where did you
go? Well, actually, I started to run back to where we'd come. Probably panic, really. And I think it was just shock, and panic and shock, whatever. And I went running back the way we'd come, and all I can remember is two or three of them jumping on me and saying, hey, you know. Slow down, boy, you know. And then I remember some officer coming up and saying, you know, take it easy, you're all right. But and then I think one of them just stuck a bandage around my thumb, or around my hand, anyway, around my hand, really. And then next thing is, I don't know whether I flaked out or what. Well, most of it, I can't remember nothing after that. The only thing I remember then was being some way and about. Three medical men standing over me, and one was trying to make me sit up, and he said, here, have this, and they were pumping hot sweet tea. I mean, funny, I remember, I tasted it, really sweet tea. It's funny that, and I can always remember that. And then after that, I think we just hung around, and then they put me on an ambulance, and after that, I don't remember really much about it.
Where were you taken?
I don't know, can't remember.
Can't remember being in the hospital?
No.
So what is your next memory?
The next memory that I remember is being, as far as I remember, is just getting off the boat in Eastport or somewhere like that, I think.
And you walked off the boat, did you?
No, the carried us off.
You on a stretcher?
Yeah.
And where was the, I mean, you've said that you had back wounds.
Well, not back wounds. My back was killing me, really. My legs were terrible.
There must have been some kind of injuries in
well, there must have been, really, but I mean, not open wounds as such. I know my legs were black and blue, and my back was. And that was it. I can't remember nothing. I can't remember coming back either in a boat or wherever they did. I have no idea.
So you went to hospital at Eastbourne? And
somewhere at Eastbourne.
They treat you for whatever
that's right.
Injuries you had.
Yeah.
How long were you in hospital?
I think if I remember right, I think I was down there for about 3 weeks, and then they shipped me up to Dryburn Hospital.
And how long were you in Dryburn?
About 4 or 5 weeks, something like that.
Mm. Did they ever tell you what injuries you had?
The doctor said I'd got... a blasted pest planus, which as far as I could make out, I got permanently flat feet. But my legs took quite a long time for my legs to go down, actually. But I had trouble in the back for a long time. Nothing that, you know, I mean, not that was. I wasn't in pain as such, where we're stepping off a pavement and it sort of go. And he used to come on. I mean, that must have kept going on like that about, probably 10 years after the war.
But some kind of stress injury to your spine or something of that nature?
No, I had no idea, really, because I never got no. In fact, I always felt awful for the thought you saw him lingering, you know, I mean, because I felt such a jerk about it. I mean, I could actually touch my toes. And yet I could step on the pavement and go on my knees.
When you'd finished a dry burn, what happened to you?
Right. If I remember rightly, after that, we, I think, went down to a holding company.
Where was that?
Wouldn't be Saffron Weld again, would you? Somewhere down there, Saffron Weld way. And went down to a holding company then. We did nothing really, but just bum around, really. We just bummed around down there. And I mean, I think they tried to put us on one or two courses. And then I think the next thing they did was to... they had all sorts of courses. And then I think I was approached by some officer and asked me if I'd like to go on a water course. Because they reckon that when they did take over in Germany, that there would be problems with the water, you know, for the word. Anyway, as I say, I went on a water course, and I think there's about 30 of us went on that, if I remember rightly, as I recall. And then, as the war progressed, we then sent. I think the next time I went into action was that when the Germans finally capitulated, we were flown straight into Berlin, and obviously for the chlorination and all this of water and one thing and another. And having said that, I don't think I did one job when I was there over in Berlin. And we hung around there for a few weeks. And I can't say that we did anything except just tidying up and, I suppose, moving headquarters things. I was over there. I can't really remember much about that at all. Except I know it was terribly, terribly cold. And the people were actually dropping dead in the streets with cold and hunger, you know. That was awful. And I must admit, I found that very difficult then to... I mean, I've always had a sweet tooth and always carry sweets with me and all this and the other, but I'll tell you now, I couldn't eat a sweet and see them kids.
Things were pretty bad.
No, they were awful.
What stage were the Berliners in? I mean, other than
terrible, terrible. And, I mean, I could have cried for the kids. I mean, well, I mean, no, kid. I mean, when you talk about, when I say kids, I mean, you talk 14, 15, you know, and you think, and when you saw a little toddler, you know, fives and six, and there was a lot of them around, and, you know, they were all trying to, obviously, if you're starving or whatever, you'd ask anybody if you could get anything, and which we did. And, of course, we used to get approached by a lot of people in them days for, on the black market. That was pretty very rife. And which then again, you can't I don't think stop black market like that, but in any case, I mean, we hadn't got anything to really trade with apart from a few cigarettes and things. But I must admit, I didn't do any, I can say I did any trading, for the simple reason that I don't know, that's one of the reasons I never smoked. I think if you ever got taken prisoner, it must be awful if you smoke. And you couldn't get, when you see the things, even in the army, with the lads, the things used to do for cigarettes. I mean, I think, my God, that's what a cigarette does to you.
How long were you in Berlin?
I can't recall, really. I should think probably about a month, probably 6 weeks.
And then did you come home?
No. I got transferred to a place called Lübecke in Westphalia. And we joined the CCG, Charlie Chaplin's Grenadiers, as they were always called. And when we got there, it was amazing. These are all downgrading guys like myself from all sorts of battalions, and we were sort of, I suppose, looking after security, the running of clerical offices and all sorts of things, really, everything in Lubecka. And it was a sort of Lubecka in Westphalia, it was a sort of beautiful, small, big village, really. You couldn't describe it as a town. And but there's one, two comfortable sort of probably schools, which could have been, or probably even business premises, really. But I know the civilians were probably doing all the clerical and all, I suppose, a lot of administrative work for local government. And when we first went into Lubecka, now this did really rip me up a bit, but then again, and that was that when we sort of give people 24 hours or so, even less, I think, to get out of the houses, we moved in. And where the hell the Germans went, I don't know. I suppose they just bunked up in each other's places, I suppose, really, that weren't taken over by us. And I do recall one day I went into this house. Of course, the people could only take out what they could carry. And I remember walking in one day and there's these idiots dancing on this table. You know, they had a few drinks, and I must admit, I really lost my temper, and didn't make me very popular with them. But anyway, I had my own way with it. I said, this is somebody's home. You know, have a bit of respect for it, you know what I mean? But having said that, by and large, that was about the only occasion that that really happened. And then I think a few weeks after, we moved out, and I was put in charge of what I thought was it could have been a small office block, really, I suppose, really. But what we used to have in there was a sort of, I think, if I remember rightly, I had about 30 young women in the Control Commission for Germany who all worked in these admin offices. And there was probably two to a bedroom or one to a bedroom in lots of cases in this place. And we had a bar in there, and they used to have the meals there. And in other words, we were like a small hotel.
But it's the same area.
This was in Lubecka, yes. And I had either a corporal or a lance corporal, or in the case a full corporal and a private with me, and then all the rest were German staff.
And what work were you doing?
Well, just,
you were in China, but what
was happening? Yeah, well, what we would do, really run it like a hotel, really. And I think whiskey was a prime price for about...
Were you just in charge of the building?
Yeah, and the running of with the Germans, and running like you would as a hotel manager, really. I mean,
but you weren't involved with the work that the people were doing. Oh no!
We were purely, and when you think about it, they had a hell of a good life, really. When you think that this was, because I mean, obviously these people had parties, and I think they had parties every night in different little places similar to my own.
And the Germans becoming more friendly and easier to get on with.
I think, well, at first, I think they were very, very nervous of us. And, yes, very nervous of us. I think because they thought we just, as you say, if I remember rightly, I think the curfew would be about 10 o'clock at night. And, of course, there's no fraternising. And, of course, that's impossible to run anyway. I mean, people, that's the end of it. But I think I had about 10 staff working for me. And Germans. And I mean, they paid stupid wages. I mean, well, disappeared because we didn't have that much money around, you know, but not didn't buy anything. I think I had a handyman, about three or four waitresses, and probably a couple of cooks or something like that, anyway. And that was the way it ran. And you used to get your rations delivered.